You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on the Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship. In this, our first off-season episode, sadly, of the show, with the Rockets being eliminated after their Game 7 loss in the Western Conference Finals on Monday night, we're going to do a bit of an early preview on the things the Rockets may do this off-season based on intel gathered today from Daryl Morey, the team's GM. Morey and head coach Mike D'Antoni met with the media this afternoon at Toyota Center. It's part of their end-of-season wrap-up. In a way, it kind of previews the things that are to come over the next few weeks and months. And we had lots of intel about not only the potential for bringing back the current team with major free agents, including Chris Paul, Clint Capela, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, and Gerald Green, but also plenty of talk about exterior additions as well. So in today's show, what we're going to do is break down first some of the highlights of what Gerald said. Secondly, some of the big external options they could go after, including not just LeBron James, which has been speculated on a lot here in Houston, but also why I see Paul George as more realistic. And then to wrap up the show, I'm going to take an early look at the Western Conference in 2019 as it stands right now, heading into the offseason, and why, in my opinion, the Rockets are a little better positioned than I think some are giving them credit for, despite the age of the team, if they do bring it back. First things first, though, let's discuss the highlights from Morey today. If you haven't seen it yet, just go on Twitter. You can also Google search. I'm sure you'll see plenty of stories about what he said, probably some video at Rockets.com as well. But as far as major highlights, first, he did confirm that Tillman Fertitta is aware of the finances that will take to keep this team together. And there have been comments to that extent said in the past, both by the team and by Tillman himself. Also, the proof is in the pudding. If the Rockets sense that Fertitta was not willing to pay the luxury tax, and this is certainly going to be a luxury tax team, just to keep it together, let alone add to it, then the Rockets would have made some moves at the deadline rather than just let these guys walk for zero compensation. So to me, the signs have been there for a while that Fertitta is willing to pay what it takes, especially in year one of the luxury tax. We're not talking about the repeater tax just yet, but Morey confirmed today that he doesn't expect finance to be a major stumbling block, although Mike D'Antoni did interject and say that he hopes you eat at Landry's from time to time. Landry's, of course, being the restaurant chain owned by new Rockets owner Tillman Fertitta. So he doesn't expect finances to be a major hurdle. He also mentioned that bringing back the current team is a goal. And that's logical because they won 65 games in the regular season, easily shattering the prior franchise record of 58. They went 8-2 in the first two rounds of the playoffs, which is an 800 winning clip, even better than the 790 they were at during the season. And then in the Western Conference Finals, they pushed the defending champion and probably soon-to-be champion again, Golden State Warriors, the most talented team ever assembled, with four All-Stars, two former MVPs, and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, pushed them to the limit, beat them three times, and probably would have beaten them in the series if not for the perfect storm of circumstances, the Chris Paul hamstring injury, the awful officiating in Game 6 and Game 7, the ridiculous 7 of 44 from behind the arc, including an 0 of 27 stretch in the middle of Game 7, just sort of the perfect storm of circumstances. Really don't think it's a stretch to say that the Rockets were the better team. Today, I think the Rockets are aware of how some of these quotes in the media can be taken out of context. Morey did not want to go as far as to say that they should have beaten the Warriors, but they both, Morey and D'Antoni, said they could have beaten the Warriors was a fair assessment, and I think if it was off the record and they knew it wasn't going to be in the headline of a million stories, I think they would privately tell you that it goes beyond that. They should have beaten Golden State. Nonetheless, they do have the great foundation of a team already in place. And when asked how you can improve a 65-win team, the first thing you heard from Mike D'Antoni was win 70 games and win the title. And I think if you just simply run it back, then there's an opportunity that you could do that just through what you have in place, because there is room for more organic growth. Remember, this is just year one of the James Harden-Chris Paul partnership. They also got better defensively as the year moved along. Mike D'Antoni mentioned that since about the All-Star break, they were third best in the league. So we did continue to see the chemistry build. We did see Clint Capela take a huge step forward this year. And even though a lot of the team is in the upper 20s to low 30s age range, which means there's not a lot of room for individual growth between the chemistry and Clint Capela still at just 24 years old, having turned it earlier this month, then potentially just from bringing the team back and maybe having a few better bounces, better injury luck at the right time, that could be enough. And I think that is a good place to start. Once again, the four free agents that you have from the regular rotation, Clint Capela, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, I suppose we can say five and throw Gerald Green in there as well, but Gerald in his 30s, likely a minimum guy. If the Rockets want him back, my guess is that he is. Of the other four, the Rockets have bird rights for all except for Luke Bamute, which means that for Chris, for Clint, for Trevor, it's pretty easy to retain them and make the math work. And by the way, the amount of times they spoke Daryl about the leadership of the team, referring to himself, Coach D'Antoni, owner Tillman Fertitta, James, and Chris, it's a foregone conclusion that even though Chris is entering free agency, he's going to be back in Houston, because even though he opted in, he chose Houston last summer. That's the reality. Chris Paul is here to stay. Same can be said for Trevor Ariza and Clint Capela, in my opinion, and Luke Bamute, even though because he signed for a minimum deal last year, the Rockets don't have his bird rights, they can spend up to the mid-level exception. And with him being somewhat of a non-factor in the playoffs due to injury, maybe a few lingering injury concerns after dislocating the shoulder twice, and him being 31 years old, my bet is that the Rockets are able to bring Luke back, unless they're able to slide someone into that slot that they somehow feel is an even better value. But given what Luke did for them over the balance of 82 games with his defense, my guess is that they want him back. And from everything I've seen, Luke wants to come back. The interesting thing that we heard Daryl confirm, though, was that they do expect to pursue higher-end options in terms of, of course, he can't mention specific names, but the top two free agents on the market, LeBron James, Paul George, but Daryl absolutely did not rule out going after bigger name free agents, as he usually does every year, no surprise. But the biggest takeaway I had when asked by Jonathan Fagan of the Chronicle about whether his answer about bringing the current team back and about pursuing top free agents elsewhere, Jonathan asked Daryl if those two statements were incompatible. And Daryl said, no, I think they match. And of course, Jonathan was asking about, well, how does that work financially? And Daryl made a joke after it that he had new math. But in reality, what I think he's referring to, and if you're a regular listener to me here at Locked On Rockets, I think you've heard this discussed before, is that for the Rockets, bringing back the current team, which makes sense based on all the things they did positively on the floor this season, and bringing in a top free agent, these are not necessarily competing interests. In many cases, including last summer, they can be one in the same, because you don't sign the free agent through free agency. You trade for them the way they did with Chris Paul late last June, specifically an opt-in and trade. If you get a player like LeBron or Paul George to opt into the final year of their existing contract, that's even better than a sign-in trade, because a sign-in trade would trigger the hard cap, which might make it difficult to use all the bird right that you have to give guys like Paul, Capela, Ariza, etc., the contracts that they want, whereas an opt-in and trade, that does not trigger the hard cap. So that makes it all the easier in terms of maintaining flexibility for the Rockets to bring back the supporting cast. So I've said it before, but to make clear, when you talk about the Rockets going after LeBron James or Paul George, the Rockets are not going to dismantle their current team to get $20 or $30 million under the salary cap to make that happen. For starters, that's not good for the team around the big three. If you bring in a third star, and it's understandable why they go after a third star, the Warriors have four all-stars. The more stars you have, the greater your margin of error. Maybe you get more insulation, makes it also easier to rest guys like Chris Paul, like James Harden throughout the season. Just in general, you have a bigger margin of error. So it's understandable why the Rockets want to bring more all-stars to the equation, especially with the Warriors having four for the foreseeable future. So the Rockets, they're going to go after those big guns, but they're not going to go after it by trying to tear apart the team, which is great as is. And quite frankly, if you have to go after those guys by tearing apart the current team, then you're also making it harder to convince those guys on coming to the Rockets, because what's going to be there when they join you. The appeal is to add them to an existing 65-win team that is almost at the level of the Warriors as is. So the focus for Daryl Morey is not tearing it down to add another star. It's how do you add another star on top of everything else, the same way that the Warriors were able to add Kevin Durant while only losing guys like Andrew Bogut, Harrison Barnes, et cetera, a couple of summers ago. So as explained, it comes down to getting, just as what happened with Chris Paul a year ago, one of those big stars to opt in to the final year of their existing contract. And then with whatever their original team is, Cleveland, Oklahoma City, maybe you can also throw in some prospective 2019 free agents whose original teams are concerned about them leaving for nothing in a year. And the key is what the Rockets can offer to make the math work better for those teams than the player simply walking for no compensation and then them getting the benefits of whatever the cap space is. So that's the value equation for the Rockets. And that's why a lot of the things you're seeing early on in free agency are misguided in terms of how the Rockets can clear cap room. No, they don't want to do that because they don't want to break up the core of this team. They want to add to that. And just as they were able to do it for Chris Paul last year, they may be able to this year, especially because once the draft passes, they'll have all of their future draft picks that they can trade to facilitate it. So in terms of Daryl Morey's comments this afternoon, nothing groundbreaking, but he did not shy away from the question of the Rockets pursuing external acquisitions of big-time talent. And in fact, he went as far as to clarify that it was not an incompatible goal with bringing back the current team, which, read between the lines, you're not talking about going under the salary cap, you're talking about making a trade. And of course, because you're talking about making a trade and keeping the current team together, then that also means that you're probably going to be an above-the-cap team regardless. So when you talk about the exact salary figures that go out to Trevor Ariza, Clint Capella, Chris Paul, et cetera, don't get caught up in that, would be my advice, because quite frankly, it's not like you can then reallocate the money somewhere else. It's not like you can say, well, Clint Capella, if we have to pay him $23 million instead of $20, I'm just throwing abstract numbers off the top of my head here, then what if we could then spend the $20 million on DeAndre Jordan or somewhere else? No, it doesn't work that way because you're going to be an above-the-cap team. That's the way that you can keep this team together and potentially add on top of it. That's the plan that I have suspected for a while, and a lot of us in the Rockets Twitter community, especially on the salary cap side of the fence, but I think we got pretty strong confirmation from Daryl today without mentioning specific names, because of course he's not able to do that, with players who are under contract in the case of LeBron James still actually playing basketball games, the finals starting Thursday. If you view Daryl's press conference, it's pretty clear, in my opinion, what the goals of the Rockets are. Will they be able to do it? Stay tuned. Now, as far as the steps from here, I mentioned the pursuit of LeBron James because it's been discussed ad nauseum, including here on this show. He's the best player on the planet. He might be the greatest of all time. He has a close relationship with Chris Paul. He's going to be a free agent. He wants to compete with the Golden State Warriors, and the Rockets are the team that clearly is the closest to the Warriors and best positioned to do that. So it's pretty easy to connect the dots and see a scenario where LeBron would be interested in Houston. And as far as making the math work, I mentioned opt-in and trade being the way to go to add on to the current core. LeBron's salary next year, if he opts in, would be about $35 million. And to make that work the easiest way, it's not impossible to do it otherwise, but you'd have to cut in without moving Ryan Anderson. The easiest way is just to move Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, who make combined slightly above $33 million between them. That's the easiest way to make the math work. There are some other scenarios where you can, in terms of Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker, Nene, and a whole bunch of other guys, but at that point, you're starting to cut into the heartbeat of the current team a little bit. The easier way is to find the taker for Ryan Anderson. Either Cleveland would be willing to take him themselves if they're getting draft pick compensation, or you bring in a third team who would take Ryan Anderson's contract either into cap space or by sending expiring salaries to Cleveland. And of course, whoever gets Ryan would be getting future draft compensation from the Rockets in exchange for doing that. And in terms of whether Ryan is movable, I explained it in our Game 7 post-game episode, and I've done it plenty throughout the year, why I think this summer, with 2 years, $40 million left, and the Rockets having all their future draft picks to move, he's a lot more movable than last summer when he was 3 years, $60 million, and the Rockets couldn't trade another draft pick until 3 years in advance because they'd already traded the 2018 pick in the Chris Paul trade. So I'm more optimistic on moving Ryan than others, and so I think that's what puts the Rockets in the ballgame for LeBron. The bottom line is, can the Rockets close the deal in terms of convincing LeBron to come here? They have advantages, but I'll believe LeBron leaves Cleveland when he does it because they are his home. He took a beating the first time, and I think all things being equal, he wants to make it work in Cleveland. Can the Cavaliers convince him of that? We'll see what happens in the finals. We'll see, maybe they're able to trade their number 8 overall draft pick for some other veteran help. We'll see when the time comes. Certainly the Rockets will be in LeBron's ear, and he's at the forefront of the list, in my opinion, of the guys that they can add and all of a sudden be at, or in my opinion, even above the class of the Warriors if they're able to make that work. That's been discussed plenty. What I want to discuss on this episode is why the other big name on the market is more realistic than a lot of folks think, and that's Paul George of Oklahoma City. 28 years old, prime of his career, set to enter free agency, but he does, like LeBron, have a player option that he can opt into for next year, which makes him a very realistic target. And I know there's a lot of skepticism over George because there's not the direct link to the Rockets that there has been with LeBron. Everybody knows the relationship that LeBron has with Chris Paul. But why would George be interested in Houston? Quite simply, if he wants to win. Same reasons LeBron would be. If you want to compete with the Warriors, and Paul George at 28 years old, it's not like he's especially young. The Warriors, the Rockets are the best place that you can challenge the Warriors and have a chance to win a title. So if he wants to win, and from all we've seen, he's a competitor, then Houston is a place that he can do that. And if the Rockets take care of Chris Paul after opting in last summer, then that, in my opinion, makes it all the more easier for someone like Paul George to trust that, hey, even if I pass up my big payday this summer, the Rockets will take care of me in a year. I think with Chris Paul, it was a bigger risk because Chris Paul last summer was 32, and it's pretty clear that the Rockets are going to keep Chris, that they're going to take care of him, and I think that's a clear signal that Daryl Morey's word is good. So if you opt in and Daryl Morey, wink, wink, says they'll take care of you, then you can take them at their word. And I think that's something that Paul George would consider. But the reason that I think George is realistic, the salary cap math is actually easier for Paul George than LeBron, because if Paul George opts into the final year of his existing deal, his salary is about $20 million. LeBron, as mentioned earlier, is about $35 million. If the Rockets are going to move close to $35 million in salary for LeBron, you have to answer the Ryan Anderson question. Who's going to take him? Is the draft compensation enough? Et cetera, et cetera. With Cleveland, there's the concerns, would they pay the tax on a team that does not have LeBron? All those types of things. For Paul George, you don't have to find a home for Ryan Anderson. You don't. Eric Gordon and Nene, that's enough. And Eric Gordon, still just 29 years old. We saw what he did in the Western Conference Finals. We saw over the balance of the regular season when for long stretches he was at a quasi-all-star level in terms of his impact. Yes, Eric Gordon is a positive asset. In my opinion, he is better for you than if you just let the player leave and take the value of cap space, because Gordon is a positive asset. Even if a team like Cleveland or Oklahoma City can't directly use Gordon, or and they feel that way for whatever reason, okay, well, you can flip him into cap space later and get draft pick compensation for doing so. Remember, Eric still has 2 more years under his existing deal. So Eric being a positive asset, that's very significant. And with Paul George, you don't have to move Ryan Anderson to make room. It can be Eric Gordon and Nene has a very small contract at about $3 million a year, and it's possible he could retire at any point. Certainly, that's not going to be a major stumbling block to a deal. And if Oklahoma City thinks that Paul George is going to go to the Lakers for no compensation, I think Eric Gordon makes a lot of sense for them, because Russell Westbrook is signed to a max contract. He's going to turn 30 this year. Oklahoma City is not looking to rebuild. It's not like they just want cap space. If Paul George is going to leave them, getting some compensation is probably better than nothing. And you could actually make a case that Eric Gordon and Russell Westbrook, have a lot of synergies in terms of Gordon's potential to space the floor alongside Russell. So I think it's a scenario that makes a lot of sense in terms of whether it will happen. I could see some hesitation from OKC GM Sam Presti. We all know that the current upward swing for Houston started when Presti traded James Harden to the Rockets. Maybe he's reluctant to help the Rockets more, being a conference rival and being all the after effects from the Harden trade. Also, the current super team, Golden State, was formed because Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City for Golden State. Do they want to help form a second super team out west by sending Paul George to the Rockets? Perhaps not. We'll see what Presti wants to do. But on paper, in my opinion, getting Eric Gordon is a better scenario than watching him, him being Paul George, walk to the Lakers or somewhere else, Philadelphia, wherever it may be, for zero compensation. And I'm sure some will say, well, isn't Paul George supposed to be interested in the Lakers? He's from L.A. Yeah, but first off, a lot of stories, in case you haven't noticed, involving the Lakers and free agents are overblown because it's a massive market with tons of fan interest, and every NBA aggregation site pumps out rumors involving the Lakers like nobody's business because they know they are wonderful for traffic. I think Paul George, in a perfect world, would like to be on the Lakers. I'm sure he likes LA, but is he willing to do it if the team is not a contender? I don't know. And unless he's going there with LeBron or another max free agent, you just add Paul George to a team with a lot of young, unproven talent that hasn't been to the playoffs in 5 years. What does it really do? I don't know that that scenario is as appealing as a ready-made Houston team to compete for a title. Now, if he just wants LA, he doesn't care about winning, maybe he'd do it anyway. That's a pretty big assumption. Most guys, and for a guy that nicknames himself Playoff P, I think he wants to win. And the way to win in these days is to team up with other stars. That's the only way you can even compete with the likes of the Golden State Warriors. And there's a pathway. If Paul George opts in, as far as can he get his max deal? Yes, I think you can see from how the Rockets treated Chris Paul that they'll honor their word, they'll take care of him a year from now. Does it make sense for Oklahoma City? On paper, yes. Eric Gordon is a better scenario for them than watching Paul George leave for zero compensation. You can poke holes in it by saying, well, would Oklahoma City help create another super team? But if one already exists in Golden State, you could also argue, what does it really matter since you already have a team that's at that level regardless? So there's no lock. And as with LeBron James, the tough part would be selling Paul George or LeBron that Houston is better than anywhere else. Because with Paul George, there's his existing team in Oklahoma City. They would love to have him back. And you could make a case that maybe if they didn't lose Andre Robertson, they could have been a better playoff team than they were losing in round one. Maybe he stays there. We know the appeal of the Lakers. With LeBron, there's Cleveland. It's his home. It's his legacy. They're in the finals right now, by the way, and I doubt they win more than one game at the most, but who knows if they somehow do. Could that change things? Sure, absolutely. There's also the Sixers with cap room, a young team with a ton of talent in the weaker Eastern Conference. So both of those situations, the toughest thing to do is going to be to sell those guys on Houston. But if you can, there are pathways to make it work. Now that the Rockets have all their future draft picks moving forward, and if there's one thing you've seen in the modern NBA, it's that players tend to get what they want. And another key piece from Gerald today was when he mentioned that he thinks they can get whatever free agents they want. And what he meant by that is the Rockets winning 65 games, the culture they've established being the closest team to the Warriors, it's put them in a very lucrative position. Mike D'Antoni being a very beloved coach with the style guys want to play for. Houston's a destination now. They can get the types of guys, just like we saw last summer with Chris Paul, Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, and that was just coming off a season they won 55 games. Imagine now they won 65 and pushed the Warriors to the brink. Houston is a destination, and if they can sell LeBron or Paul George, there's a way to make it work, because especially in the Paul George case, and that's why I think you shouldn't underplay that possibility, is Eric Gordon better than for Oklahoma City than watching Paul George leave and getting nothing in return? For a team that's not looking to rebuild with Russell Westbrook in the prime of his career? In my opinion, it's clear as day that Eric Gordon is a better scenario for them than that. So that's why I would keep my eyes open. I don't think it's option one for the Rockets. I think clearly you'd rather LeBron. He's the greatest player of all time. Still the greatest player in the league today. There is a relationship with Chris, and I think the Rockets are certainly going to pursue that on the front burner. But I would not write off the Paul George possibility if, for whatever reason, LeBron doesn't want to come to Houston, if he wants to stay, or if Cleveland draws a hard line in the sand on Ryan Anderson and you can't find a third team to offload Ryan Anderson to as part of that trade construction. I would not write off the Oklahoma City trade possibility. It makes sense for Oklahoma City. It makes sense for Paul George. And it makes sense for Houston, because as much as I like Eric Gordon, if there's one thing it comes down to in terms of playing the Warriors, you need as many two-way players as possible. That's something I mentioned early in the series. When you have one-dimensional players, the Warriors have a way of exploiting them, and Eric Gordon, as great as he can be offensively, there are certain defensive limitations. Now, he did play relatively well by his standards in the series defensively, but Paul George is just a different animal, certainly an all-star every year, but beyond just being an all-star, it's his flexibility defensively, and the Warriors, they just have a way, if you're limited offensively, they'll run you off the floor that way, the way they did Luke Bamute, especially not being able to trust his jump shot after the shoulder dislocation. And if you're limited defensively, well, we saw what it did to Gerald Green over a large stretch of that series and why it made Ryan Anderson unplayable. And those Ryan minutes in Game 7 might have ultimately been the difference, how they were able to exploit him. So you need two-way players. Paul George, the top of the list, makes sense for the Rockets, makes sense for Oklahoma City on paper, makes sense for Paul George if he wants to win, and I think he's wired to do that. So while it's not the front burner, there's no way the Rockets can add both LeBron and Paul George. And I think LeBron is certainly plan A, as he would be for any team, because it's LeBron freaking James. I would not discount the Paul George possibility like I've seen some do. It makes a lot more sense than you think, and there is a pathway to make it happen without having to answer the question of who takes that very unfriendly Ryan Anderson contract of 2 years, $40 million. Now, I wanted to discuss the big names in the first segment, because, or the first segment after the Daryl Morey conversation, because I know that's the sexy talk. What if the Rockets are able to add on to this 65-win team and build a juggernaut? That's the ideal scenario. But even if you bring back the current team, just run it back, there's enough that with better injury luck, with a few more bounces, the officiating 7-44 from 3 in Game 7, that you could beat the Warriors as is. That's certainly very realistic, in my opinion. The only cold water that I've seen thrown on that, and that's what I want to address here. I want to first talk about the discussion of adding on to the current team, and then if it doesn't work out, well, what happens if you largely bring it back and just kind of tweak around the edges a little bit? I'm fine with that scenario. The only cold water I've seen from a few analysts is wondering if the Rockets are too old. And I know where that argument is coming from, because Clint Capella at 24 is the only man in your rotation entering next season who's going to be younger than 29. You have a number of guys like PJ Tucker, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza that are in their 32, 33-year-old seasons. Not like they're ready to fall off a cliff yet, but certainly you're not going to have individual growth, at least not normally. So it's fair to wonder, when you have an older team, is there going to be a year where there's some fall off? Number one, I don't think the Rockets are so old. It's not like you have a lot of guys who are going to be 35, 36, and you just typically see a huge drop in their athleticism. That said, some other teams in the West do have younger pieces that theoretically could take more steps forward. The Rockets just have Capella. And maybe one of these younger prospects they have, Joe Chi, Isaiah Hartenstein, Jananu Anuaku, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe one of those guys takes a big jump over the summer. They'll get some chances at the summer league. We'll have to wait and see, but as of now, I wouldn't bank on that based on what we've seen to this point. You kind of have to deal with what you have seen on the floor right now, and then if one of those guys surprises you, you take that as a very happy development at a later date. If the Rockets could get a younger contributor, would they like to do it? Yes, that's something Daryl Morey addressed at the press conference today. But even if they don't, I think the folks wondering about, are they too old? Is the window closing? Was this the only opportunity in terms of them being in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, one game away from defeating the Warriors? I don't think it is. What I think is getting undersold here is just how wide the gap was between the Rockets in 2018 and every other team in the West besides the Warriors. The Rockets won 65 games. Other than the Warriors, no one else even won 50. It was a gap of 16 to 18 games. That is massive. Short of LeBron James, Paul George, some sort of massive acquisition going to one of those teams in exactly the current form, meaning they don't have to trade anyone to create room, and that's pretty unlikely. Short of just a seismic shift for one of their rivals, even if the Rockets don't win 65 games, and I doubt it would be, if they don't win 65 games last year, I doubt it would be because some of these players decline. I would think, if anything, as these players get towards their age 32, age 33 seasons, maybe the Rockets manage minutes even more tightly with guys like PJ Tucker, Chris Paul, Trevor Ariza. Maybe the Rockets take more of a longer view to where winning 65 games in the regular season is less important. Maybe they manage minutes a little more tightly and end up winning 57, 58, 58 games with more of a long-term focus on the playoffs and making sure everybody is in optimal physical condition for then. Even if the Rockets are not as laser-focused in the regular season, in part because of their age, who in the West is poised to take an enormous jump to that top tier? The closest I can think of, maybe Minnesota with their young talent, but it seems like there's some internal dissension issues with Karl-Anthony Towns. Utah, I guess, because Donovan Mitchell is really great. But even for those teams with young talent, going from upper 40s to upper 50s to near 60, that's a massive jump. It's tough from year to year just to move up by five or six games through just sheer, organic growth, I guess is what you would call it. Generally, you don't make moves that are that large to the upper tier of the NBA without some sort of seismic trade or free agency acquisition, and not many of those teams have a lot of cap room for that to occur, or because the players are so young that there's just going to be a huge jump in terms of individual production. And while there's a lot of young players out there, it's not like they're just 21, 22 years old. In terms of the other teams in the West, I mentioned Donovan Mitchell, he might be the one candidate, but the Timberwolves with Karl-Anthony Towns, Jimmy Butler, the Pelicans with Anthony Davis, we'll see what happens with Boogie Cousins. It's not like those teams in the upper 40s are just going to suddenly become something they weren't this year. Russell Westbrook is going to turn 30, as I mentioned with the Thunder. Carmelo Anthony, if he opts in, is on the downhill side of his career. So the Rockets, they've got a buffer zone. And even compared to the Warriors, who won 59 games, Steph Curry and Kevin Durant are now or going to be in their 30s next season. And they're going to now be coming off four consecutive NBA Finals appearances. I think they're worried about mileage as well. I don't think you're going to see them go pedal to the metal to win 65 or 70 games. So in terms of if the Rockets, as is, are too old, I think at some point over the next few years, you would like to see an infusion of youth. But in terms of the West in 2019, I don't see the window closing because the gap is so big now between Houston and the rest of the Western Conference. And by the way, the two teams that I could mount the biggest cases for optimism for, based on their youth, I mentioned earlier, Minnesota and Utah, the Rockets ran through them in the playoffs and won 8 of the 10 games, many of them not even close. The gap is enormous. So even if the Rockets are a little older, even if they have a few more injuries or they just simply are more conservative because they want to make sure that they are in peak physical condition for the playoffs and maybe a way that they weren't fully this year, even if they want to play the long game and they fall down to 57, 58 wins, which is not inconceivable given the fact that for the Rockets now, the standard is not the regular season. The standard is always going to be getting back to the Western Conference Finals against the Warriors and finishing the job in a way you couldn't this year. I don't see the window closing for the Rockets, at least not next year. There is no team in the Western Conference that I can see that is even remotely ready to make that sort of jump, 15, 20 games. And even if we can concede that the Rockets win 5 or 6 fewer games based on age, conservative injury management, all those types of things, it's a huge, huge gap. So for those wondering about the age of the Rockets, is it a concern in the back of Daryl Morey's mind? Yes. But for the foreseeable future, meaning the 2019 season, is it something I'm excessively worried about? Nope. Because that gap between the Rockets and the rest of the West, it's big. It's big. In many ways, this is why it made sense for the Rockets to go out and get Chris Paul last summer. To some extent, you need to zig when the rest of the league zags, and you've had so many teams that are playing the long game in the era of Golden State trying to play for 5 years from now when the Golden State team starts to decline. Well, because of that, there are not many other teams that are positioning themselves to challenge in the NBA today. So in terms of the current Rockets, could there be some slippage in the regular season? Yes. Is it enough to bring in other threats to them besides the Warriors? Nope. I think the Rockets are going to be a top two team in the West regardless. And as I mentioned earlier, I don't even think the Warriors, after four straight NBA Finals appearances and now with Durant and Curry in their 30s, I don't think they're going to be especially aggressive in the regular season either. I don't think you see them trying to win 70 games. So could age be a slight factor? Yes, but isn't enough to, as I've seen some allege, close the window or be of concern? Not in 2019. I think whether you bring in a star, even if you just essentially bring back the current team because you're not able to add LeBron or Paul George and you just tinker around the edges here or there with a couple of depth acquisitions, either way, the Rockets are going to be in pretty damn good shape when it comes to the Western Conference in 2019. And what ultimately is the goal, home court or not, get you one more shot against the Warriors in a best-of-seven series to finish the job in a way that you did not this year. So with that, I will wrap up today's show. This will do it for our off-season preview episode, but, well, with this being the rumor season of the NBA, I'm sure we'll have more talk in the days ahead. Don't plan on analyzing the finals too closely. Not going to be fun to watch, but, of course, if you're a Rockets fan, you probably should hope the Warriors win the series, because if Cleveland does well, then it reduces your chances at LeBron James for the reasons we have discussed earlier. But other than that, don't plan on analyzing the finals too much, and I know it's probably a sore subject for everyone in the Rockets community anyway. We will, however, have rumors, I'm sure, and as we did last offseason, we'll have you covered right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast discussion on the NBA's Houston Rockets. If you're not already following me on Twitter, that's the best place to get content in the interim. I am on there at Ben Dubose. The show is on there at Locked On Rockets. We also got a Facebook account, facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website at LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Always you can access content, ask me questions about the team, suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan. Also, don't forget to subscribe to us and leave us 5-star reviews if you can. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Megaphone, we're on all of those platforms. And if you subscribe to us, if you leave us 5-star reviews, that's how we're able to make the business model work as the only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. So for today, I will wrap it up from Toyota Center. Again, today was the press conference from Daryl Morey, end of season. If you have not seen that yet or read some of the clips, I strongly encourage you to do that. Twitter, Rockets.com, they'll have you covered if you want to hear full analysis from Daryl heading into this offseason. For now, I will sign off. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back very soon talking Rockets right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on the NBA's Houston Rockets.